This is The Loving Project, a podcast celebrating the 50th anniversary of Loving v. Virginia, the Supreme Court decision that legalized interracial marriage across the United States. In each episode, we hear from a different couple about what it's like to be in an interracial marriage today.
This time we hear from a couple that didn't just cross a racial divide to be together. They crossed an ocean.
My name is Mae, and I'm Korean American.
My name is Ken, and I'm a white Irish immigrant.
We've been married since 2003.
And we have two daughters, and their ages are 10 and 7.
We met at my friend's wedding in Westchester, New York. She was my closest friend in college, and she had studied abroad in Dublin and ended up meeting Ken's best friend from childhood.
And I was best man for the wedding, and we met at the rehearsal dinner before their wedding in New York. We really hit it off right from the get-go.
I actually remember seeing him for the first time. I was upstairs in my friend's bathroom with her, and I remember looking out the window and saw Ken walking up the driveway. And I remember saying to my friend, like, who is that guy? And she laughed and was like, that's Niall's best friend. And then we ended up hitting it off right from the beginning, I think. So they were here for about a week after the wedding, and when you guys went down to D.C., I remember I gave him my number, and my older brother was at the wedding and was like really hitting it off with the group of friends as well, and Ken, and said, you guys should come stay with us. And so we had all these like Irish guys in our apartment in Staten Island, and we played tennis and we went sightseeing together and really just had a good time as a group, like with everybody. And went to the Malaysian restaurant where Ken ordered a food, and he didn't realize in Asian culture or, you know, Korean culture, but also at that particular restaurant, it's a family style dish. And so was reaching for his dish and got passed all around, and he was left with nothing. And I remember you saying, where's my food? And that was like one of the moments where I was like, oh, this is going to be different. He doesn't get the family sharing thing.
That was a problem.
Yep.
The first time Mead came to Ireland was when I was on the Irish national softball team, and there was a mini tournament, and I played a softball tournament for 3 days, and we drove all over the country and tried to hang out as much as possible. It was a whirlwind.
And you took me to so many, within that short period of time, took me to so many important, meaningful places for yourself, like your favorite, you know, your favorite mountain and the gardens, like just really, really quite something. Mm-hmm. I remember that. Yeah.
At the time I worked at a company, and the diversity was guys from South Africa or New Zealand or whatever. And, you know, they're all white guys. And that was, you know, that was sort of exotic. And then for anyone to meet me being Korean American, it was like, well, first, she's American. Second, she's Asian. Third, she's not Catholic, which is, you know, a very stereotypical Irish thing. I think I caught my friends a couple of times like staring at you, because it was like, it's just natural. You'd never seen somebody like that before.
I have to say, though, your friends were like, they're just unbelievably accepting. And I think maybe that's why you and I connected so well, is we really have this openness about people, that people are just people, and it really doesn't matter what you look like. And your friends were so welcoming, and so, I mean, they were like my friends, like from the beginning, and mm-hmm. very accepting, and I never noticed that. Them looking at me.
Well, I think I busted them. We went through all these iterations of communication, of texting was really difficult back then internationally. Skype really hadn't matured. It was MSN Messenger that sort of worked. I figured out a way to do texting to email addresses via mobile phone and all these funny little ways of contacting each other. But I had a very understanding boss in Ireland. I was working as an IT manager for an architecture firm and began to spend a lot of money on Aer Lingus flights. This was pre-September 11th. Things were a lot cheaper and easier then.
There was a point where I think I had felt that I was going to be going to med school and I really didn't want to be in a relationship if I knew that it wasn't something that was going to be sustainable. And so I think at one point I asked him, what's our future looking like? Are we going to keep dating? And I think he said, well, I'm not leaving my country because I'm a homeboy and I'm going to stay here forever. And I think I got mad. Uh-huh. I was like, okay, well, I guess this isn't going to work out.
There's that Eddie Vedder cover song I used to play all the time. I'm a patriot and I love my country.
So it definitely wasn't on his mind immigrating at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the defining moments, I guess, in our relationship was when September 11th happened. I was in med school at that point. And I think you were the only one that was able to get through to me. I was in med school in Brooklyn. I remember you were like the first one who was able to call me internationally to see where I was, because you knew I had usually went into the Trade Center to go shopping on my time off. It was pretty defining.
I was in the office with a call from a friend that worked at an airline and said, do you know what's happening? Because he knew we were dating long distance. And he said, you know, check out the TV. Or I think in the office, we all ran to a conference room that had cable TV and we're watching live footage of what was going on. It was insane. It was kind of a defining moment. It was like, okay, do I really want to be 3,000 miles away when something like this is going on? And it felt very vulnerable.
That's right. I think you said that before, that for you, that was the moment where he realized that if I were not a part of his life, that it'd be very difficult, very different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And at that point, we also, I think you were trying to come over on a work visa and try to find some work over here. And then after September 11th, things just... it became really difficult to get work visas. They essentially put a stop on the professional work visas that Ken had been looking into. And so we knew we wanted to be together. And at that point, we were together for close to...
Nearly 2 years.
Nearly 2 years at that point. And so we decided to go another route, actually. And instead of pursuing the work visa, because it was so difficult during that time... we decided to go for a fiancé visa. We are not impulsive. It's striking how impulsive it seemed and how risky it seemed to not only become involved in a long-distance relationship, but potentially an immigrant experience relationship, and then our cultures being so different. But for some reason, I mean, I would say love. Like, we really loved each other quite quickly and really connected.
Definitely seemed worth going for. But I kind of felt like there were similarities between Korean and Irish culture that was a lot of older fashioned things. I mean, respect for your elders and simple things like that we understood.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the idea of like hospitality and kind of taking care of your guests. I mean, your mom is just great with that. And my mom, too. I mean, she really looks after people who come into her home.
Mm-hmm.
My parents flew over to Ireland because they really wanted to meet Ken's parents. It was really important to them. And so they were there for a week. And during that time, my mom and dad really connected with your parents. And it was really something, wasn't it? It was like they were meant to be friends as well. It was really, really...
They had a good time.
Yeah, had a great time. Do you remember your parents and brother and sister and sister-in-law took them to that pub in...
O'Donoghue's? Yeah, they're a real old-school bar in Ireland that, you know, gets so busy that the bar guys stand on the counters to hand out pints of Guinness to, you know, 10 deep behind the bar, and traditional Irish music and stuff like that. We have a great picture of me's mom with the full pint of Guinness that she didn't actually drink.
She didn't drink because she doesn't drink. But she was having an awesome time. They were both having a great time, and your parents.
I feel like we're a little older fashioned than some couples. I don't know, but the Korean culture is absolutely must meet the family before anyone gets engaged or anything like that. And I asked May's dad's permission quite some time before that.
Right, when you were over for one trip, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was their way of following through on protocol, coming all the way to Ireland and meeting everybody. It was very cool.
After that, we started the process of applying for the fiancé visa. You went through a lot of interviews,
yeah,
fingerprinting.
It's a very interesting process to go through. There's a lot of forms, fees, fingerprints, photographs, trips to the US Embassy in Dublin, even medical checks to make sure that you don't have TB and all sorts of stuff that you wouldn't think of when you're like, I just want to go live closer to my fiance. And that took about, 9 months to process the visa so that I could fly to New York with the mandate to be married within 90 days, which didn't really jive well with my family.
Right. And then we had to work around my med school schedule, my rotation schedule, and find the one day that I had off that we could coordinate everybody. Actually, nobody really had a choice. We just had to tell them that it was that day. And I still got in trouble for missing my rotation that day to get married.
I had pretty good memories of walking through Brooklyn on a weekday to City Hall. Me was in a wedding dress, but nothing crazy.
Yeah, and just a white dress.
There's trash guys shouting from their trucks, congratulations.
And the construction workers clapping.
It was fun.
Yeah, that was a good memory.
We first got married in City Hall in Brooklyn. You know, that was more, I mean, we were getting married, but also it fulfilled our visa requirement and all that stuff. And we kind of promised that we would have a wedding in Ireland so that our families and relatives could all come to that. And the church wasn't exactly open to, you're a Methodist mm-hmm. by background and a Catholic. It got a little tricky. Mm-hmm. But we ended up following through with what was called a blessing in the local church where I grew up, but not a full-fledged wedding. But we still went ahead with the pre-Cana course, which was sort of one of the steps to getting married in a Catholic church. And I think that had to be processed by a local bishop, and then that was sent to Ireland. And then at the end of the day, it still ended up being a kind of watered-down blessing and not a wedding. So it's just overall would not be what you would think. But you know, when you're a kid and you're like, oh, I'm going to get married in the church where I grew up and I attended service for 20 something years or whatever. And it really makes you ask some big questions of, okay, well, you know, that's not very accepting, is it? And that didn't rub either of us the right way.
And we really pursued it because it was so important to, you know, to your parents. It was part of their culture.
I was disappointed and it really shaped how I felt about things. And then as the years progressed, when we had kids, it was, do we really put them through this or do we let them make their own choices? And I think that's where we stand right now, is they get to pick.
I think I had asked early on, because I grew up in America and my childhood, and especially early on in my childhood, there weren't many Asians around, not many Koreans for sure, maybe a handful. And so dating in high school was difficult because I was different and I looked different. And it wasn't until college, when I went to college in New York City and was around like a whole different experience of Koreans and Chinese and Japanese, and really felt like I fit in. And then to find somebody, again, who's Irish in another country, I think I brought it up that, you know, I'm Korean, I'm Asian. And, you know, this isn't going to change. And how do you really feel about it? And I think you said it doesn't matter.
I think the emotion was just there, that it was such a good feeling between the two of us that I hadn't experienced that before. I just wanted to be with her after very little time. And then we started to unravel the cultural stuff.
I was born in Michigan, but grew up right outside of Philadelphia in Bucks County in the 80s. At that time, I think there were just a handful of Asians, and really, it was difficult. It was definitely difficult, you know, growing up, and also having, my parents are immigrants from South Korea, and my parents were progressive in some senses, but also very, very traditional. And I think a lot of that really does have to go with Koreans have a strong sense of community and collectiveness, and American culture is very, they praise individualism. And so I think finding that balance and my parents being able to accept that there is going to be a push and pull in terms of that value, I think was the biggest thing to struggle with. But also just standard, I guess, experiences as an Asian American in that community is, you know, being teased for the way you look and the way your eyes are shaped and your language, the way you communicate. And even though outside of school, you know, I rarely did speak Korean, and it was generally within the house, there was an assumption that you didn't know how to speak English, and you were made fun of, you know, in a really derogatory way. And I think having those experiences, it makes it clear that you are different, you know, even though you don't feel that you are different because you're living in America, and America is made up of all of these cultures, that no, there is something about you that doesn't belong.
Yeah, that was a lot to learn. I'd definitely been very insulated or naive about a lot of these things. And me would tell me, you know, about childhood experience of going somewhere and being stared at basically because you're Asian. And then started to experience just things directly, like getting on a train and people would cut in between us as if to separate us, as like, oh, you two can't be together, which was an odd thing to experience, where you'd nearly end up holding hands to get on trains and things like that because it's this weird effort to separate us.
Sometimes people would assume, like even over here when we were dating early on, they would assume I wouldn't know how to speak English. That happened in Ireland too, early on in our relationship. And so they would talk to him instead of, you know, talking to me.
Definitely is interesting, the process we went through for immigration services and stuff like that. Half the time we would go to an immigration interview and it would be assumed that I was not the interviewee. It was going to be me.
Right. They would always assume I was the immigrant. I think every single time before they would pull out the paperwork. I think one of the things that was also striking is when the older daughter was born, there was an assumption when I wasn't around that you had adopted this baby, and people would ask, where did you get her from? When did you get her?
Remember that? That happened on more than one occasion. I'd be holding our oldest when she was just a baby at a checkout or whatever, and some nice old lady would be like, oh, is she all yours, or when did you get her? I mean, strange to be asked these questions, but I mean, other stuff like the school would also just self-categorize the kids as being Asian, and I'm like, why did they do that? You know, that's just based on appearance, or their last name is Murphy.
Right. I remember I tried to get that changed because I specifically had written Korean and Irish and, you know, mixed. And I think I even checked that off. But for some reason, they were categorized under Asian. And I think I tried to get that fixed, and it was very difficult, very challenging. So
it doesn't fit the book. It's
my parents were concerned. You know, this is not only somebody who's immigrating, but because they had the immigrant experience and knew how difficult it was. But, you know, this is not just somebody who's going to immigrate, but he's not Korean. And if you have kids, they're not going to be Korean. And I think that was also like a hurdle for my parents to get over, is that if we are together, they're not going to have a Korean son-in-law. And if they have grandkids from us, they're not going to be 100% Korean. So I think there was some concern about that and, you know, wondering how is this all going to work out? I mean, you integrated into the family, you know, very well. My brothers love you. But that is always there. Like, well, what is that going to look like once he's really, you know, a part of the family? But I think one of the cool things is that you embrace the culture and he tried the foods. I mean, there's still some things he won't eat, but he tried for the majority. You love the foods. He loves Tae-jung-guk now, which is, I remember when you first tried it, you like just refused to even look at it. And now it's loves that. My mom makes him food specifically for him. We'll bring it over just for Ken. He tried to learn Korean, the Korean language, which I think to my parents was a really big deal that he was making this effort in eating the food, trying to learn the language, learning the cultures. My parents used to do like ancestor ceremonies where you would honor the dates of the deaths of your ancestors. And so Ken would participate. And that was a big deal to allow a foreigner or allow somebody who's not Korean to participate in that kind of ceremony. And I think he understood it was a big honor to be able to do that. And I think with that, they felt a lot more comfortable with him being in the family.
We made it work. I mean, there's these obscure similarities between Irish and Koreans. They like to drink beer. both countries do. There's also historical kind of parallels where Korea suffered a lot of invasions and things like that by foreign powers. Ireland the same. It just sort of subtle cultural similarities that I felt very much the same attitudes on a lot of things. And some of the things I remember being a little hard to get used to was in the household, it'd be very fluid to just switch from English to Korean and back again without blinking an eye. And I'm like, how do you do this? And my limited Korean started to pick out keywords in certain sentences, and it's like, okay, that was about the dog, and this is more about dinner. And at some point I was like, am I in trouble for something?
I think that was always his biggest concern, is there something going on that I should know about? And I think we had an agreement that if it was about him, that we would have to speak in English so that he would understand it is about him or something he was doing.
But it's interesting, the kids want to learn more Korean stuff and their self-identification sort of changes. Yeah, I mean, they will hang out with more Asian kids at school or not. And then they'll say, I want to go to Korean classes, or they really want to go to Ireland for vacation. And then the next week they'll say, we really want to go to Korea. I guess if we make it sort of simple that your mom is Korean and your dad is Irish and that you're half of both, but you live in America. So we try to emphasize that it's kind of special and not something to be ashamed of or anything like that, that you're a part of everything. You get to celebrate extra festivity.
Right. Yeah, I think we do try hard to make sure that they understand that, you know, both cultures are important. There are things that we do and things that maybe not just, you know, festivities or holidays, but also like we try to take them to Ireland as often as we can so that they are with their cousins in Ireland. They see their grandparents in Ireland, their aunts and uncles, and get a sense of what it means to be Irish. And I think here it's easier because my parents live here, my two brothers are here. You know, my parents are very much involved in their lives and will take them to things that we necessarily wouldn't take them to, like the Korean restaurants, stores, the bang shop, which is like a bakery, a Korean bakery that they've been going to since they were babies. It's really neat to have that for them. But I do worry, and I think recently one of them asked, so am I more Korean than Irish? Because I think she was identifying more with the Korean culture because they had spent some time with my parents. And so she's kind of struggling with the idea, well, am I more Korean if I spend more time in this Korean culture, or am I not?
When you have kids, it really makes you evaluate your cultural identity, I think, because you start to think about things you never thought about. Like, what am I going to hand down to my kids as traditions or cultural important things? And many of the Irish things are all wrapped around religion. I'm sure that's similar for a lot of countries, but in Korean culture, it seemed very, not formal, but a lot of things are very organized, and it's like your 1 year birthday, you do this and you wear this and you eat this and you set up a table with these items for the kid to choose, which will determine their path in life. And you start to think about all of these things. So I think we started to focus on some things, like when we go back to Ireland, we would go to like the history museum, or last visit we went to see a castle which was 800 years old with the monastery that's rebuilt in the center of the castle from the Romanesque period, and they really like that. I mean, it definitely makes you, what I had some trouble with that, evaluating what's important. I mean, do we celebrate Christmas? Do we celebrate other things? And we're figuring out.
Yeah.
We'd like to thank Ken and Mi for sharing their story with us. You can find out more about the Loving Project at our website, lovingproject.com. That's where you'll also find pictures of some of the couples profiled on the show, more episodes, and links to follow us on social media.
The Loving Project is available on iTunes, Google Play, NPR One, and just about anywhere else you find podcasts. And if you like the show, please consider leaving a review. I'm Brad Linder.
And I'm Farrah Parks. Thanks for listening to The Loving Project.
In the next episode of The Loving Project, we'll hear from Jean and Moss.
Jean is white and grew up in Rochester, New York, while Moss is Japanese-American and grew up in a New Jersey community with a large Japanese-American population.
When their daughter was younger, she came home from school one day and was upset. Jean asked her what was wrong.
Finally, she said, "Well, people are pulling my ponytails and they're calling me Ching Ching Chinaman." And when you're a white parent, this isn't an experience you've had. So you're like, how could this possibly be? How could anybody do this to my child? And Moss didn't really have a response.
Well, it's out of my experience too. I mean, nobody ever called me a Jap. It never happened to me. I mean, I knew what that meant, but I had no direct encounters in that same way.
But it was interesting because her teacher at school handled it beautifully.
Yeah.
And found the kids that were doing it and sat them down and said, "Does anybody tease you at home?" And they said, "Yeah, you know, my cousin teases me." "Well, how do you feel about it?" "I hate it." "Well, you're going to take care of Michi on the playground." And they did. And it stopped.
Moss and Jean's story, coming up next time on The Loving Project.